government's religious discrimination bill put into question and calls for a disability employment agency. Hello, I'm Harrison Peterson with the National Indigenous News. The federal government has avoided answering questions about the future of the religious discrimination legislation if there's no support from the coalition. Yesterday, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese called for the two pieces of draft legislation balanced, which protects the religious liberty and the right of schools to employ, while also protecting the rights of children. Speaking to media this morning, Attorney General Mark Dreyfus says the plan remains to seek bipartisan support.
We are aiming to reach a bipartisan outcome.
What happens if you don't?
We're aiming to reach a bipartisan outcome. That's what constructive work is, when you are aiming to reach a bipartisan outcome. And I'm not contemplating that we won't reach that destination.
Senate Opposition Leader Simon Birmingham says it's too early to say if the coalition will support the bill. The Disability Action Network has put its weight behind calls to introduce a new National Disability Employment Agency, but says more work needs to be done first. Amy O'Halloran reports.
The Disability Action Network says the proposed body would bridge some gaps in employment for people with a disability. However, it says it needs more time to develop programs with businesses of all sizes to make employing people living with a disability viable. CEO of the Australian Disability Network, Corinne Strauss, has told National Radio News in many cases, employees haven't trained well enough to ease their transition back into work.
Because there wasn't enough system support, or employers weren't really well geared enough to welcome people with disability.
The report also found tertiary education was the single biggest factor to increase people living with work-limiting disabilities' chances of long-term employment.
Former President Donald Trump has had a few things to say about former Australian Prime Minister and current US Ambassador Kevin Rudd. In an interview with UK Conservative Nigel Farage on GB News, Trump was asked if Rudd would stay in the position if he was re-elected in November.
He won't be there long if that's the case. I don't know much about him. I heard he was a little bit nasty. I hear he's not the brightest bulb, but I don't know much about him. But if he's at all hostile, he will not be there long.
Rudd has been an outspoken critic of Trump, previously describing him as a destructive president and a traitor to the West. Still to come, China's foreign affairs minister will be meeting with Australia's later today.
G'day, it's Costa here. Getting to know your neighbours is a lot like planting a garden. A bit of care and attention early on, then some regular nourishing, can lead to beautiful results that last a lifetime. Connecting with your neighbours can be as simple as saying hello, stopping by for a cuppa, or even organising a barbie. Sunday, March 31 is Neighbour Day. For more great tips on how to create belonging for yourself and others, just visit neighbourseveryday.org.
Program sponsor.
The foreign ministers of Australia and China are meeting today in Canberra to discuss trade and other issues. Top of the agenda will be Chinese tariffs on Australian wine, lobster and beef, imposed in 2020 during a diplomatic row. Penny Wong and Wang Yi are also set to discuss the plight of Yang Hengjun, an Australian writer who was recently handed a suspended death sentence in China. Senator Wong says she's confident the two can come to an agreement on outstanding issues.
I also welcome progress on trade between our countries, including on wine exports, and look forward to the resolution of outstanding issues. Predictability in business and trade is in all of our interests.
The UN has warned an entire generation of children in Sudan are facing catastrophe as a bloody war there enters its second year. The internal conflict erupted in April last year and has forced millions of people from their homes and resulted in tens of thousands of deaths. The UN says there's an estimated 24 million Sudanese people teetering on the edge of a generational catastrophe. One refugee has told media she hadn't been able to get her medication since the war began last year.
My last pills finished 3 days before the war. From that moment on, I'm suffering. I'm in constant pain. I'm so tired.
And that's the latest National Indigenous News.
When you need medical care, ask yourself, do I need emergency care?
Is this something a GP or nurse can treat?
Mm-hmm.
Can I wait for a routine appointment?
Mm-mm.
If you have an urgent, non-life-threatening issue like a cut, minor burn or sprain, get the treatment you need at a bulk-billed, walk-in Medicare Urgent Care Clinic. Find your closest clinic and open times at health.gov.au/MedicareUCC. Part of making Medicare stronger. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
Not sure who to turn to for legal advice?
Want someone who knows what you and your mob need?
And need to find someone you can trust? Call Marawa Law.
They are the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm and the legal advisor of choice for government, business and traditional owner groups in the commercial and Indigenous law sector.
They are 100% Indigenous owned and help their clients with the right advice in native title, joint ventures, leasing, property and lots more.
Visit marawalaw.com.au or call today on 07 404 130 88. Choose a law firm that understands you.
Marawa Law. Station sponsor.
Little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow.
Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev. Going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bunbury Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NIRS, National Israeli Service. You can have your Sabre calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, Queensland Path to Treaty. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Associate Henry Dow, who's with Marawa Law, and got Henry on the line. Henry, very good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Trevor. I'm well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So you're with Marawa Law. Big shout out to Leah Cameron and her team. How long have you been part of Marawa Law, Henry?
Going on a year now.
A year, yes.
Yeah, time flies.
Enjoying the journey?
Absolutely. We get to work with some pretty amazing clients all around the country. So good. It's been fantastic so far.
Fantastic. Now, a yarn today, topic one here is what is treaty, what is the importance, and how are we looking in Queensland regarding treaty, path to treaty?
So broadly, treaty is an agreement between two sovereign nations.
Good afternoon, North Tropical Coast and Tablelands. Weather forecast for Thursday the 21st.
So we view it as the original sin of how Australia was set up,
yep.
That the First Nations sovereignty was never recognised, and there's that argument of it was never ceded. So yes. Now we're looking at next steps, how do we move on as a country, and treaty is listed as sort of as most important in that regard.
Okay, fantastic. What does this look like when we're talking about Uluru Statement and looking about the hearts, you know, recommendation of the Makarrata, and here in Queensland, how does it look for us as First Nation people in regarding the Path to Treaty?
Exactly. So a lot of listeners would have learned about Uluru's Statement from the Heart over the last couple of years as we had that debate nationally.
Yes.
That's one model, and that called for truth-telling, treaty. We didn't get our voice to Parliament last year, so it's perhaps we move away from that model. But broadly, that three-step model is what the states are talking about as well, and that's certainly happening in Queensland. So in 2019, the Queensland government committed towards a path to treaty. They're looking at that now, and there's been some tangible steps, there's some real steps. They've put in an office for treaty, and they're starting to talk about funding, and funding at a local level, which I think is most interesting to your listeners.
Yes.
In terms of, at the moment, Queensland government's talking about, let's make treaties at a local level.
Sure. And what's the weight behind it? Is it a toothless tiger, so to speak, Henry? Or, you know, when we're talking about treaty, is there meat on the bone? Where are we at with it? Is it real, as black people want to know?
Exactly. It's getting to the point where the rubber's going to have to hit the road. At the moment in Queensland, there's been a couple of years of talking about a path to treaty. What's that going to look like? No one quite knows yet. And after last year, where there was a disappointing national result around a voice to parliament, lots of people would be aware that governments have started to talk back their commitment. In Queensland at the moment, they're still committed to it. There's still funding to do the pre-step before a treaty. So we're going to have to find out what that looks like. But at the moment, the Queensland government hasn't said this is exactly what a treaty is going to look like.
Sure.
And you know, perhaps every prescribed body corporate or Aboriginal corporation gets a certain amount of money to be involved in that.
Okay.
But hopefully we would find out soon in the next year or two.
Okay. And when you look at tribal people, when you look at communities, there's something like 30 or different tribal communities in the state of Queensland. So we're looking at 30. We're looking at 30 odd treaty conversations as such, or is it just one for the lot?
I mean, we can take different models from around the world and around Australia because it is happening simultaneously in other states and territories. So, for example, in the United States, they've got around 300 treaties with their First Nations people, and that's on that tribal basis. In Victoria, which is a bit further ahead in their treaty process, they've put out some guidelines around the prescribed body corporate. A lot of your members, listeners would be familiar with. They have a first in best dressed presumption that they will treat.
Okay.
But also, if I'm a group who doesn't have a prescribed body corporate in Victoria, it's looking like I can put forward a case why I should be able to treat with the state of Victoria. So maybe Queensland looks to a model like that.
Sure.
In the Northern Territory, so just across the border from Queensland, they're going through their treaty process as well. And at the moment, they've got grant funding out there of up to $20,000 for different groups to put their hand up and say, we want to be involved in what treaty looks like and truth telling looks like. So these are some models that Queensland might look to in the next year or two.
Okay. Because we as black people, we say that there's not one size fits all. We've got all the different tribal people. I mean, when we go to another man's country, you know, another tribal land, different rules apply, and respecting the different rules apply, and respecting people, and their culture. So that's how we look at it. That's how we look at it. It's got to be, if there's 30 odd cultural, 30 odd tribal people out there, there's got to be 30 odd treaty processes.
And absolutely, and as important in Queensland as anywhere, considering how large the state is. Obviously, you have some tribal people in very urban settings, all the way up to Cape York. In very, very remote settings. And, of course, we've got Torres Strait Islander people to consider as well, who have had their own unique background.
All right, fantastic. And in regard to you as a lawyer and Mara Law, for example, as the firm, when you're talking to community, tribal people, you're working for the people. So you're understanding their their vision and what they want to see happen, and you work to that degree, do you not?
So, you know, we often are engaged by First Nations groups to negotiate, say, against the Queensland government or with Queensland government. And at the moment, the treaty process is still in its infancy, so we're not there where a negotiation happens.
Okay.
But we're hoping, and we're seeing in other states and territories as it moves towards the treaty, that there is going to have to be some negotiation around the conditions of a treaty. So whether that's more land rights being given as part of that treaty being signed, there will come a time where the different representatives who are signing treaty with Queensland government will get to sit in a room, and that's where hopefully there will be good legal advocacy on both sides to come up with something fair that allows everyone to move forward together. We might be a couple of years away from that, but it certainly will come around quickly.
Okay, and Henry, just paint the picture regarding representing the people in the courts. We are virtually up against the Queensland government. So they got a representative in regarding legal representative. So your conversation is with the legal entity to put our point across. Is that the case?
Correct. So Queensland government will have, you know, more lawyers in the room than anyone.
Thank you. Yep.
On any matter. But, you know, First Nations people in Queensland who have had, you know, been there from the start in terms of land rights, you know, they will have their legal representatives. And I think the story of land rights in Queensland in particular has been not to be intimidated in the face of overwhelming odds on the other side sometimes. I think that helps when your mission is pretty clear.
Pretty clear. Well, when you look at LAW, law, and we as First Nation people, L-O-R-E, well, in LAW, you cannot take something that's not yours. I mean, that's the foundation, is it not?
Absolutely, absolutely. And
I've been lucky to work in some pretty diverse remote parts of Australia, including yes. Arnhem Land, where, you know, alongside remote Queensland was, you know, where land rights came from. And I always say, pretty extraordinary stories of people knowing their rights, inherent rights to the country, and, yes. and fighting it all the way up to Canberra and winning. So I Thank can't you. See that stopping anytime soon.
Thank you. Well, you're it's all about enjoying the journey and, fight the good fight. Henry Dow, thank you so very much. Big shout out to the Murra Law team and thank you for your yarn. Please keep in touch and we'll yarn soon, my friend.
Thanks, Trevor. Cheers. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There it is, beautiful yarn there with Associate Henry Dow, who's a lawyer with Murra Law, and just talking about treaty and what is treaty and what is the importance of treaty. And we're talking about the Queensland path to treaty. So, yes, we are at the table. We haven't walked away from the table, and the fight continues, but fight the good fight. That's what it's all about. Have your saying yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, deadly number here, 1-800-422-416.
Been here for about 9 years, and we have watched our children grow. Happy New Year. No resolutions here. Now they have nowhere to go. Now they have nowhere to go. School can be more than just a corridor. It's a place where science meets their dreaming. But they lock the door. What do we need a school for? We can drown in a bigger stream. We can drown in a bigger stream. And our children roam the streets, and they let their feelings show. Remember me when they throw away the key, 'cause I had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. Lies and threats and discrimination. Yeah, we all know the situation. Government said that it's inflation, but it's just another kind of assimilation. Can we be the best that we can be when all the doors to us have closed? And you don't want to see what's to become of me.
cause this is not the life I chose. No, this is not the life I chose. And our children roam the streets like they're moving kind of slow. Remember me when they throw away the key, cause I had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. Nowhere to go.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
Very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji Country, as BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to News National News Radio Service. Have you say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Our next segment we got is Which Way Yarning, and that's proudly sponsored by Pecconi, and that's at Brinsmead and Edmonton. And they give us a box of food here at Bummer Brippin Media, healthy living, healthy lifestyle we talk. And the yarn, Which Way Yarning, is with the police officers from Edmonton Police. And we have Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay and his bodyguard there, Steve Grant, PLO, Police Liaison Officer. And a very good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor. How are you going?
G'day, Trev.
Very good, very good. Thank you for coming. Week just gone like that. I just feel as if I was yarning with your mob yesterday.
That's right.
But here we are 7 days later. Look, great to see you. Steve, who are your mob? Where are you from?
Yeah, Steve Grant, proud Jitterbowl person from the Cardinal Rainforest areas of Ravenshoe.
Yes. Web feet, you got, eh?
Correct.
There you go, brother. Take that snorkel out of your mouth so I can understand what you're saying. The wettest town in Australia, Tully. Always fighting there with Ingham and Innisfil as well. And Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay, hillbilly, tableland boy.
Tableland boy, Atherton, North Queenslander.
Riding cowboy.
Yep.
Good to see you, gentlemen. Now, our chat today, visible address numbers.
Yep.
So...
Yep.
Talk to us, please.
Yeah. So look, it just seems common sense, but having a visible address number helps people find your address.
Well, emergency wise too.
Emergency wise, yep. And look, even Aussie Post, Ergon Energy, Telstra, and your own visitors. Mm. But yeah, you're right. The importance of visible address numbers for emergency services. It helps us find your address very quickly when time is of the essence. Say.
Well, as people go to Bunnings to pick up a brand new lawnmower or, getting a hose or shovels, buy a couple of stickers with big numbers, come back home, put them stickers on your fence or something, put it on your wall and your door,
Yep, absolutely.
And even painting on the gutter at the front door.
Yeah, that's right. A few years ago, we had a guy up here in Cairns that was offering his services to paint numbers on people's gutters.
Yeah.
I know that raised a bit of a concern because people thought it was a scam. Mm. But, it was something that police were supporting because, certainly when we're trying to find an address, that's hugely helpful. Mm. It might not be your address that we're going to, but, look, it'll help us do the countdown to find the address that we are looking for. So,
I was going to say, well, if not you, get your two neighbours outside, put their numbers on there. Then we'll know you. But still in all, what we're saying is man in the middle. But we're talking about the importance of it. It's something so simple, but it could be life-changing.
Absolutely, yep. And a bit of trivia for you there. So our street numbering begins with a 1, of course, at the beginning of a street. Generally odd numbers to the left and even to the right. So, and you may see a block of land that's divided into parts. So you get your 12 A's or 12 B's, or
yeah, gotcha.
You know, or combined blocks. Maybe you know, might be 26 to 29 or something like that. You know, so find out what number you are, of course, because we want the correct number displayed in front of the address. The other thing is our rural numbers also, which is a method of identifying rural properties, and that's consistent throughout the country. So they're a distance-based system. So it basically identifies how far an address is, or the entrance to a property, from the road's starting point. Now, that's measured in metres, divided by 10 and rounded off to give the rural property number. So if you ever see some of those, you know, 10 numbers long along rural roads, that's what's going on there. So you can actually probably determine how far you are from the next intersecting road by that number on the fence.
So those long numbers are virtually a description of where the place is compared to the next main road.
That's right. So for emergency services, when we turn in, and let's say it's rural number 4567, we will know that that's going to be around about 4 kilometres from that intersection, which really helps, because rural properties are very difficult to
find,
you know, because, you know, we might have a 200-acre block. It's got the main residence road, but there might be tracks off to a water trough or,
a when you get to the property, you have to get out of your vehicle and order an Uber to get to the front door.
Almost, exactly, yep. And that's the interesting thing with those rural numbers, because they continue for the full length of the road, so that can go through multiple government areas.
Yeah.
So we might be, you know, in some of our more remote stations, a rural number may go through into a different council area.
And look, some people name their property, but you're virtually not looking for the property name.
No.
It's the number, the address.
Exactly, yep. So we won't be looking for, we will be looking for the numbers. And, you know, and that's one of our important messages here is that to also use actual numbers. Don't spell, like if you live at number 10, don't spell 10, because most of the emergency service providers aren't looking for a written number. So we just want to see our number 10 there. And
sure.
That's plenty in.
Not a painted yellow peacock. We need numbers.
Yeah, and look, when time is so important, if we miss that number, we may have to drive down, turn around, and come back, and we've lost, you know.
Well, we're talking about life threatening. Yep. If someone's, especially ambulance, or someone's in trouble, medical, or there's a bashing going on, or whatever, or someone's with a knife, have you.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Life or death.
Yep. So we. You know, just general maintenance around the house should include that, making sure your number's clear, that whether you're trimming bushes around it, like you say, go to Bunnings, you can get some really, really Larry-looking
numbers
there.
Exactly.
And put them up, you know, so, because you never know when you're going to need an emergency provider to find.
And I'm thinking of a little fundamental yarn we have in here, but it's an important yarn. And the fundamentals of it all is very important, highlights it. I said life-saving.
Yep, absolutely.
So the topic here today with Which Way Yarn is visible address numbers. So our boys in blue are highlighting the importance of having your numbers on your fence, door, wall, front gate, exposed very strongly.
That's correct, yep.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
Yep, and I know we were talking earlier about intersecting streets as well. So sometimes a street name can be intersected by vacant blocks.
Well, the front door's around the other side,
exactly,
which is in a different street, and you're looking on this street and you miss it.
Yeah, so when you're making that 000 phone call, you really want to get that message out as well, that, you know, look, sometimes emergency services can be confused by where that entrance is, and just give a bit of a description.
We're talking about that because I've seen houses who've got their, because it's a cross-section intersection, that they have their number, name, and their address. Of the street.
On the
because
corner.
It's on the wrong street.
On the corner.
The way it's facing.
Yep.
So then you know, of course, they want their parcels delivered there to the right address as well.
And clearly,
you know?
People have been confused by that previously, so they've taken that extra measure to make sure.
It shows that the police or the emergency units can get confused as well.
Yes, very easily.
Mm.
Just another little thing, Trevor. I noticed during the break, I was trying to Google my friend's address on the Northern Beaches.
That Murray that owe you 50.
Yes.
That bloke.
And to this day with technology, it didn't come up.
Oh, is that right?
Even though he's been in the residence for 3 years.
Yep.
I put him on Google Map. didn't come
Google
up.
Map, GPS, and your black tracker, still couldn't find it. Yeah, so very important. But there's the
that might be something that people can do with their friend's place is tell them how hard it is to find their address.
Yeah, mm-hmm. True.
You
know?
So if you can't find it, why do you think the emergency services are going to find it?
Now you may get an argument over it, but if you lose a friend over it, well, at least all his friends in the future will know where he lives then.
Exactly.
But you no longer won't know. But so very important. And look, we shouldn't be lackadaisy with it all. Mm. For yourself, for your own personal reasons, having your parcels delivered properly and what have you. I mean, you must have dramas. If you haven't got your number there properly, if we're talking emergency here, well, just for fundamentals, having your parcels delivered, I bet you would have dramas. Mm. If you haven't got your numbers in front there and my parcels have gone missing, well, that's your own fault. Mm.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Mm. So very important. And tell us a situation where, like I said, you'd missed, you have to go back or report back, radio back. I can't find this address. With number. Yeah, have you got the people's mobile number? Let me give them a call because I'm at the front here.
And look, that happens quite frequently, yes, you know, on some of these jobs where you know, we if we can't find that address, their communication centre is ringing back the informants, trying to get further details.
Yeah.
And sometimes it may be something, you know, so simple, but we've missed it.
Well, exactly.
And you've also got the other emergency services following. You know, you got the EMOs, you got the fire.
There could be a convoy there.
Yes.
And the individual who made the phone call, that's why you're there. Usually the individual of the house has made the phone call. They should be at the front then if that's the case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you can't find the numbers. That's what we're talking about
that's
here.
That's right. And it is helpful if someone is out the front, you know, just to wave down and speed things up, you know. Mm. And the person making that phone call may not be the resident.
Well, true. It could be neighbours or, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So, or passing by, whatever.
Yeah, so that can make it difficult for them too if they are saying, look, it's just a blue house with a,
you know. Thank you, because I don't have a number.
I've got no idea what the number is.
Like I said, it's a fundamental yarn here, but it's important yarn now that we've gone into it. Because when you hand me the piece of paper yarn about today, visible address numbers, I'm thinking, what for? You've highlighted it. Thank you.
Yes.
So very much and so important, you know, to do so. But like I said, it's not only for emergency companies, for Australian Post, Ugan Energy, Telstra, whatever, commercial vehicles. As I said, parcels being delivered. Highlight your numbers. So very important. Yeah. Mm. Come on, boys. Well, that's the yarn for today. Yes. Very important yarn. Yes. Now, you're mentioning that off air that you're going over to Cairns for head up again as the senior sergeant over there.
So I'm in the inspector role at Cairns.
Inspector's role.
Metro at the moment.
Okay.
But by next week, back to Edmonton.
So what's that, a 1 week stint?
Just filling in for while one of the inspectors is on leave.
So when you become like an acting inspector, are you in a position, Glenn, stepping up to that inspector's role?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Is that what you're going for?
That you're acting in that role. So. You're just making all the decisions that they would normally
sure.
make. There's a few different delegations.
But is that your vision and is that where you want to be?
I want to win Gold Lotto.
Thank you. And when you do, I'll mow your lawn, I'll wash your car, give me the right address, I'll find it. Please keep me in mind when you win the Gold Lotto, Senior Sergeant Len DeLoy. We'll be both there, eh? Hey, Steve?
Yep.
Washing
yep,
his car, definitely. Mowing the lawn, cleaning his dog.
Getting the beer ready.
$10,000 a pop if you win the Gold Lotto. But is that your vision, my friend?
Look, I don't know, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I we work towards these things. Very early in my career, I didn't really have any aspirations to go past senior constable. So,
And here you're a sergeant.
Yeah, look, and it happens. You sort of find yourself in a role and, hopefully you perform well and
So if it's offered to you, were you out with it, would you take it on?
If it was offered to me now, I've still got some studies to do before I'm eligible to take on that role.
Oh, yeah, thank you. There is the administration part of it.
That's
you have
exactly
to do.
Right. Yep. So we move towards it. I like to think our organisation chooses its leaders well, and some people get to a level, and that's the best of their abilities, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And when you do roles like that, then you have one of the sergeants at your precinct steps up and takes on your role.
Correct, absolutely. Okay. So there's an opportunity.
Sister Kerry taking over?
Yep.
That week?
Too afraid to come in this room.
But thank you, that's okay. Talk about her.
So
yes.
That's exactly right. When I go, someone acts up in my role as the...
Well, she has to come in here then.
Yeah, she should.
Thank you. She should.
Next week.
Next week. Thank you. And you were saying that you have other sergeants coming on board.
Edmonton's not a big precinct, so what are we talking? How many sergeants are we talking about?
So we've got three sergeants at Edmonton, and we've got one.
Two more coming.
One OIC, and we're looking at some growth, so yeah, we'll be looking at expanding to five, hopefully, in the near future.
Is it warranted?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, there's definitely the work there for that level of supervision, but we also want to see some growth with our frontline staff. That can put some more vehicles on the road, and provide the service that the community expects from us. Mm. There's nothing worse than seeing the troops under the pump.
Exactly.
And, and that's all the resources that we have for that shift. So we do know we've got some resources coming our way. So it's going to
holding your own.
Going to make life a little bit easier for our frontline at Edmonton.
All right, beautiful. Thank you for the yarn, gentlemen. So visible address numbers, very important. So mob out there, just check your numbers if they're in sight and visually can be seen at ease, so to speak.
Yeah.
Highlight it, and very important for emergency reasons and for your services, well, Australian Post, Hogan Energy, Telstra, what have you. But, gentlemen, thank you very much for the yarn. All the best, and we'll do the yarn again next week, eh?
Next week.
To Delhi. Ciao. Take care, boys.
Thanks, Rick.
Beautiful yarn with the boys in blue, Edmonton Police Station, and the segment here, Which Way Yarn, and proudly sponsored by IGA, Brisbane and Edmonton. They give us a box of food here, Bummer Bipper, healthy living, healthy lifestyle. But a very important conversation, visible address numbers is vital for emergency service to locate property in case of an emergency. That's what it's all about, so make sure you do your bit there. Stay tuned, add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Yarning with the bully one here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Recovery. Too deadly.
This is our culture, this is who we are. So don't give in and don't give up, never forget. We are, we are, we are, we are, we are one big family. We are, we are, we are, we are, we are one big family. This is us, this is who we are. This is our story, this is our culture, this is who we are. So don't give in and don't give up. We are one.
I had a dream last night about a world gone bad. No one appreciated the things they had. Little brothers, sisters, crying in the depths of despair. No one in. Well, people, don't you know? It don't cost a thing to care.
I had a dream last night about a world gone cold. We lost touch with our young, disregarded the old. And the songs of hope faded like a distant parade. Well, people, don't you know, it don't cost a thing to care, yeah.
We got Talk Black with Uncle Trevor, Murray from the Curry. Call in on 1-800-422-416, 98.7 FM, BBM.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your survey calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, First Nation mothers' trauma of baby removals heard an inquiry, calls to change process. With that, I'm going to have a yarn now with Sister April Laurie, that's South Australia's Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People. On the line, we have April. Good morning, Sister. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, Sister, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. So I'm Renin Gugatha from South Australia's far west coast, and I live and work on Kaurna country.
Beautiful.
Here in Adelaide.
Beautiful. Good footprint. Shout out to all the mob there. Thank you very much. Now, you're saying that you've spoken to several mothers as part of an ongoing inquiry into the removal of First Nation children in South Australia whose babies were removed at birth. So, look, shed some light on this. This is... look, across our country in regard to removal of our babies. But tell us your findings there, please, your inquiry. Thank you.
Well, my inquiry hasn't finalised yet because my report will be released in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Tabled in Parliament. But through the inquiry and also prior to launching the inquiry, I'd heard from many women about their experiences of having their babies, their infants removed at birth from our birthing hospitals here in South Australia, whether they be in metropolitan Adelaide or in some of our country locations. And what is really concerning is that the rates of removal for newborns is increasing. And we are a small population, but our birthing rates are quite high.
Yes.
And there is great cause for concern when these removals could have been prevented, or these removals could have resulted in a kinship care arrangement.
Well, exactly, Well, you can't beat black on black, hey, April?
That's right.
And you're having our mob looking after our children, if that is the case, to keep the children safe. And the goal is to bring the parents and the children back together, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we have enshrined in legislation a very important principle, a rights-based principle that has been around for a number of decades in different ways across state and territory legislation, but it's what we know as the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Child Placement Principle. So, you know, fortunately in Queensland, your legislation there has got the principle enshrined in legislation to the standard of active efforts, which means it is more than just the placement hierarchy about kinship care. It's taking into account the elements that require the system to pay greater attention to prevention,
yes,
to the way in which families participate and lead decision-making for the child or children, that there is greater emphasis on connection, ensuring that children grow up safely, connected with family, community, culture and country.
Yes.
And that we do everything possible to ensure that we have greater partnerships with the Aboriginal community. And
exactly.
That I mean the system that undertakes the child protection work has to have partnerships with the Aboriginal community in a lot of different ways.
A lot of our elders we speak to up here in Far North Queensland, they call the they call it the 21st century stolen generation.
Yeah,
and that's that comes with a lot of weight, a title like that, doesn't it, April?
Yeah, and you know that comes with listening with and walking away from meetings and with a heavy heart and saying something has to be done about this.
Yes,
and we can never have a repeat of history, but what we're finding is history is repeating itself. And the very systems
supposed to protect us is letting us down.
Exactly. And we keep the state keeps putting more money into a system that keeps failing our children and our families.
Yeah.
There's no sense in that.
Sure.
You wouldn't do that in the business world, put more good money after bad.
Exactly. And it's taxpayers' money, and you can see why. Exactly, and taxpayers' money, and taxpayers are getting upset with money being wasted. Well, that's money being wasted. So set a new program that's going to, prevention, but looks after our children, and then that's not then expense, that's investment, is it not, April?
Exactly, and that investment needs to be financial, but also the way in which the system is designed in the early intervention, the prevention side. So, you know, I think we've heard this statement before.
Broken record, yeah.
The system gets in family too late when it's too late.
Exactly.
And by then, decisions have been made in the absence of family. So what we're talking about here in South Australia is that the in terms of unborn child concern, which is the way in which the system refers to concerns for the unborn child, is that there has to be notification to mother, and her family need to be wrapped around her and helping her. And the system needs to acknowledge that family are really important in preventing an unnecessary removal.
Yes.
But to also get the much-needed services in at the right time to help the mother with her family, because far too often the mother is denied the support and isn't even aware of a notification being made around her circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you say statements here. Mothers have went outside, for example, to have a cigarette, to come back to find the hospital, find that their baby has been removed. I mean, there's no communication.
Yeah, and that's the birthing hospital working in with the Child Protection Agency, I would imagine, to have a controlled environment where they can do the removal without resistance, without challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's very cruel.
And we as black people, April, we've got the solutions to our problems. And we need to be at the table to put the solutions forward. But they need to come from black people. And we need to be in the discussion big time.
Absolutely. And you only have to hear what community mobs say about the fact that our agency for child protection here in South Australia has very little engagement and partnership with the Aboriginal community to even begin to design the solutions from the Aboriginal community.
Yeah.
Hence the inquiry, where I've managed to hear the voices of, you know, community members, those affected by removals, but also community leaders, elders, families, and also Aboriginal children and young people themselves,
yes,
to give me the information, their experiences about what can the system do.
Okay.
And a lot of the answers lie with our Aboriginal community controlled sector. And because that's about local level people working with our families who know our families the best. And that love and care at the local level is what needs to happen. And to be consulted and to have input is crucial.
Because of course it's crucial. And you know, I've read here that hospital staff are told not to tell the new mother that her baby is about to be removed, and went so far as even leaving letters on the pillow, on the hospital bed pillow.
Well, I think that's a practice that has to stop, because whilst they might be administratively handing out the letter of authority on the bed, the legislation doesn't necessarily make them have to give the authority to remove in their hands. They just need to know about it. I mean, it is terrible that we even have the practice, let alone the legislation, that can treat the mother as such. And we have many examples of where there's really bad practice.
Yes.
And that just needs to stop.
There's got to be change in the process, hasn't there, April? Got to be change.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And some of this can be fixed up very quickly.
Of course.
In terms of changing practice.
Of course.
I think there's a lot of hard work to be had to challenge a culture within an organisation dealing with the culture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and their families, particularly children. And
April, that's not in South Australia. That's across the country.
Yeah, that's true, brother. That's absolutely true.
My sister, good yarn with you. Thank you very much for shedding some light. Please do keep in touch and look, fight the good fight. Good luck with the ongoing inquiry into removal of First Nation children in South Australia. Thank you very much, April. And sister, stay strong and we'll yarn soon, eh?
No worries, Trevor. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And to all your listeners, I hope to be on again to share the story of my inquiry report.
Lovely. Be in touch. Thank you. Thank you, April. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Deadly yarn there, sad yarn, strong yarn. April Laura, South Australian Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People, and First Nation Mothers' Trauma of Baby Removals, heard an inquiry, calls to change the process. So there it is. This is the 21st century. We need to change, and things don't change. If things don't change, have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Tracks will break. around him. Let the fire send a message from all of us. We need to make amends. The brand new day is coming from deep within the ditch. For the sake of our elders, we must cross that bridge. Gonna build a fire, gonna let it burn. Raise a flag up higher till everybody learns.
So now come sit down, will you talk with me now? Let me see through your eyes where there is so much life. We are biding our time for these myths to unwind. For these changes we will confront. So please beware with every place that you had, and look to your soul for these things that you know. For the trees that we see cannot forever breathe with the changes they will confront. You know, some people they just won't understand, or just won't understand. For your message, but I don't understand. No, I just won't understand. Out of the things you are proud of. If you love this coast, then keep it clean as it holds, cause the way that it shines may just dwindle with time, with the changes it will confront. So you know some people that just won't understand, or just won't understand these things. Thank you for your message, but I don't understand, or just won't understand. Some people they just won't understand, or just won't understand these things. Thank you for your message, but I don't understand, or just won't understand these things.
Thank you for your message, but I don't understand, or just won't understand.